Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining me again today. This is your host, Brother T. And we finished Lesson 50 yesterday in A Course in Miracles workbook. And today we continue. But we're for the next 10 days, we will be in a review. We've had 50 workbook lessons. And so beginning today, we will be reviewing those lessons, five a day for the next 10 days. Let's take a good deep breath for just a moment and come to center in a moment of silence together. Thank you for joining me today, and thank you to everyone who's joining us on blogtalkradio.com, The Best Hour, as well as picking us up on our Facebook channel, facebook.com/coursemastery. So let's begin our session today with some instructions about our review. This is our first review. Beginning with today, we will have a series of new review periods. Each of them will cover five of the ideas already presented, starting with the first and ending with the 50th. There will be a few short comments after each of the ideas, which you should consider in your review. In the practice periods, the exercises should be done as follows. Begin the day by reading the five ideas, with the comments included. Thereafter, it's not necessary to follow any particular order in considering them, though each one should be practiced at least once. Devote 2 minutes or more to each practice period, thinking about the idea and the related comments. Do this as often as possible during the day. If any one of the five ideas appeals to you more than the others, concentrate on that one. At the end of the day, however, be sure to review all of them once more. It's not necessary to cover the comments that follow each idea literally or thoroughly in the practice periods. Rather, try merely to emphasize the central point and think about it as part of your review of the idea to which it relates. After you've read the idea and the related comments, the exercises should be done with your eyes closed and when you are alone in a quiet place, if possible. This is emphasized particularly for reviews at your stage of learning. It will be necessary, however, that you learn to require no special settings in which to apply what you've learned. You'll need it most in situations which appear to be upsetting, rather than in those which already seem to be calm and quiet. The purpose of your learning is to enable you to bring the quiet with you and to heal distress and turmoil. This is not done by avoiding them and seeking a haven of isolation for yourself. You will yet learn that peace is part of you and requires only that you be there to embrace any situation in which you are. And finally, you'll learn that there is no limit to where you are, so that your peace is everywhere as you are. You will note that for review purposes, the ideas are not always given in quite their original form of statement. Use them as they are given here. It's not necessary to return to the original statements, nor to apply the ideas as was suggested then. We're now emphasizing the relationships among the first 50 of the ideas we've covered and the cohesiveness of the thought system to which they are leading you. So let's begin then with Lesson 51. The review for today covers the following ideas. Number one. Nothing I see means anything. The reason this is so is that I see nothing, and nothing has no meaning. It is necessary that I recognize this, that I may learn to see. What I think I see now is taking the place of vision. I must let it go by realizing that it has no meaning so that vision may take its place. Number two. I've given what I see all the meaning that it has for me. I've judged everything I look upon. And it is this and only this that I see. This is not vision. It's merely an illusion of reality because my judgments have been made quite apart from reality. I'm willing to recognize the lack of validity in my judgments because I want to see. My judgments have hurt me, and I do not want to see them, to see according to them. Number three, I do not understand anything I see. How could I understand what I see when I have judged it amiss? What I see is the projection of my own errors of thought. I do not understand what I see because it's not understandable. There's no sense in trying to understand it, but there is every reason to let it go and make room for what can be seen and understand and loved. I can exchange what I see now for this merely by being willing to do so. Is not this a better choice than the one I've made before? Number four, these thoughts do not mean anything. The thoughts of which I am aware do not mean anything because I'm trying to think without God. What I call, quote unquote, my thoughts are not my real thoughts. My real thoughts are the thoughts I think with God. I'm not aware of them because I've made my thoughts to take their place. I'm willing to recognize that my thoughts do not mean anything and to let them go. I choose to have them be replaced by what they were intended to replace. My thoughts are meaningless, but all creation lies in the thoughts I think with God. Number five, I'm never upset for the reason I think. I am never upset for the reason I think because I am constantly trying to justify my, quote unquote, my thoughts. I am constantly trying to make them true. I make all things my, quote unquote, enemies so that my anger is justified and my attacks are warranted. I have not realized how much I have misused everything I see by assigning this role to it. I've done this to defend a thought system which has hurt me and which I no longer want. I'm willing to let it go. Let's take a good deep breath now for just a moment of silence as we consider these five ideas from lesson 1 through 5. Often I enjoy going back to these early lessons. And I like to just read the ideas together because they are synergistic. They are all teaching us basically the same thought. These are all iterations of one idea, one truth, that we've been hoodwinked by our own thinking. As I've shared with you in earlier lessons, God did not create you to be a thinker. And I know we need to consider that. We need to think about that. We need to give that thought. And as I've shared before, you know, that just me saying that has caused some people some upset. But he's very clear about this. As we continue to understand this teaching, our brother Jesus is very clear that we are the ones who have created this thinking mind. And we've created it to replace the void, literally, of not being, I should say willing, to be joined in mind with God. We've created a scenario. We've created an illusion. We've fell into a state of sleep, dream state. And in that state of sleep, we have walled off, if you will, refusing to listen. We have literally created sound barrier as a metaphor to hearing, to being in communion with, to be one with the thoughts of God. And the Holy Spirit then has, we've learned, become our link, because it really is nothing more than our right mind that never really was hoodwinked or disconnected or confused, if you will, by the sleeping self. Now, in all of our lessons, I've been relating to you quite consistently, pointing to the analogy of the small sleeping self. The small sleeping self is a duplication, symbolic duplication of exactly what the ego mind has done. A small sliver of ourselves, if you will, a small sliver of mind, a small aspect of ourself is walled off. We drift off to sleep when we go to sleep at night, and that small sleeping self, that little sleeping self, even though it's just this little bitty almost nothing of who and what we are, is still powerful enough to create an entire universe of experiences. I call it the dreamscape. And throughout the evening, throughout the night, whenever we're asleep, we walled off, we have blocked out from our conscious awareness that we still have a body, a physical body that is safe at home in bed. We're oblivious to that as our reality. We're oblivious to that as our state of quote-unquote being, and this little bitty small part of us is believing itself to be the continuation of what we are in form. Yes, we have a body, and we're looking at material things. This dream of this dreamscape, this dream of the drama, this dream of the self is completely oblivious to the life we're living, the work we have. It's oblivious to people who have come and gone in our life, and we meet strangers, and we meet sometimes people that are familiar, and we spend time with people who have, in this waking life, already passed away, have transitioned out of this experience. But that little bitty sleeping self is just like nothing. Because when we awaken, we realize that the thoughts of that sleeping self, that sleeping thinking mind, that it doesn't have any meaning. It's given everything in the dreamscape all the meaning that it has, and we wake up and go, well, that was just a dream. It was just illusion. So that, again, is a symbolic of what we're experiencing right now. And we can see then, if we can accept that that is a fundamental truth of the experience that we're having, that just a little bitty part of us is sleeping and completely unaware of the bigger part of us, the life that we live, that we're having today, the plans you woke up to, that you immediately came aware of as you began to wake up and you began to think about your day, and you woke up in a place that was quite familiar to you, no doubt, most often at least, with the life that you're living. And that little sleeping self is not at all capable of grasping or relating to this self in any meaningful way, because it literally believes it's living, and you are living that life, and there is no other life other than that little sliver of mind can imagine. So imagine then another little sliver, if you will, of mind, a part, a very small part of us that is unlinked, unjoined, if you will, with the higher self. And so the communication, or with God, if you will, and so the line of communication, we've walled off the communication with God. And so when this game, and the Course in Miracles and Jesus calls it the tiny mad idea that we could be separate from God, and we begin to pretend and play, and we drifted off to sleep. As he said in the Bible, you know, it talks about it's referred to as the fall, but that Adam, you know, the story of Adam and Eve, and that, you know, they fell asleep, but nowhere does it talk about them waking up. And so that's literally the situation that is our, what we're experiencing. That is the situation that we find ourselves in. So when we did that, there was a disconnect. We walled off, if you will, this loving thoughts, the loving voice of God, And what was left to us was a void. And we, thinking, you know, convincing ourselves, oh, we've done something wrong. You know, suddenly we're out of touch with love. Something must be wrong. And the silence itself, if you will, being maddening, we filled that void by creating our own thinking thoughts. It doesn't make them real. It doesn't make them eternal. It doesn't make them true. God did not create you to be a thinker. Nothing I see means anything because I have determined what it is with a sleeping mind in a dream, giving everything all the meaning that it has. I have given what I see all the meaning it has for me. And everyone else is doing exactly the same thing. Now, we do pair up. We do have these wonderful, comforting, mutually agreed upon definitions that makes us feel safe and feel okay as we work towards manifesting our idealized self. But the truth is, I do not understand anything I see, because I do not see the reality of it through the eyes of that small sliver of mind, small sliver of intelligence that's just imagining what things mean. It's making it all up. And how could I understand what I see when I've judged everything incorrectly, in error, thinking what I see is something that it's not? These thoughts that I have then, the thoughts of which I'm aware, they don't mean anything because it's all just like the sleeping, small sleeping self. All the thoughts that I had all night and the dramas that I went through step by step, right, event by event, all those experiences and dramas, it didn't really mean anything, right? Because dreams have no effect. And my thoughts while I was sleeping at night might have been thoughts of fear, could have been thoughts of guilt, could have been thoughts of shame, could have been thoughts of grandeur, thoughts of joy, you know, whatever. I'm defining my experience as giving it all the meaning that it has. It doesn't really mean anything because when I wake up in the morning, the dreamscape, the whole universe of that dream collapses into the nothingness from which it came, which was my imagination. It's just a series of images. When we first began to have the moving pictures, movies were first created, we became able to, and we still do, see nothing more than a series of images that are static, but they're strung together, and we move through them at such a rate that it appears as the movement that we see in the world. But they're just all singular static images. And so whenever that happened, and a long time ago, right? I don't know when it happened. I want to say 100 years ago, whenever movies, we really got into the movie industry began to emerge, is when they realized, I mean, sketch artists can sketch something that's moving page by page, and then they just flip the book and it looks like the horse is galloping or the person is walking or whatever. But they're all just singular images strung together, appearing to be the movement of something in motion. I believe that our dreams at night are just images, singular static images that we give motion to by building upon them, one upon the other, one upon the other, one upon the other, in very, rapid order, creating a dream based on a story. So we're making up a dream, we're making up a story, and we're adding images overlaying images upon it to give it substance and give it some reality. And yes, we can be upset. We can be very upset, in fact, by the dreams that we have at night. It seems that someone could be chasing us. It could seem that, we've stumbled upon some episode of lack. Money has been lost. Or I remember not too long ago, I found myself at the, I don't know where I was going, but I was standing at the counter at an airline terminal buying a ticket. And although I didn't really know where I was going, that didn't seem to matter. What I was concerned about as I was standing there is that I couldn't find my credit card. I didn't have any money. And so the drama was only focused on the stress of believing in that dream, in that moment, that, oh no, I don't have any money. I don't have a means of paying for the ticket to go where I'm going. Although I really had no clue of where I was going or why I suddenly found myself at an airline counter, ticketing counter. We can create and do all kinds of stories about all kinds of things. And we can become very upset. We can become quite upset about it. And when we're dreaming at night and we get upset because we're being harassed or harmed or feel some fear of being harassed or harmed or even our life being threatened, or we see someone else playing out some scenario and we are witnessing some scenario where someone is being harmed or something is being harmed or something is being broken, we can become very upset. We can get angry. I've had dreams of being in conversation, in an argument with one of my brothers. And I don't remember what we were arguing about. I have no idea. But I remember the hangover, if you will, of being in an argument with one of my younger brothers. And it didn't make any sense. I mean, none of it makes any sense. Why? Because it was just a dream. Have I argued with him in real life? You betcha. It was just playing itself out, again, in my imagination, in a dream at night. But I was giving that all the meaning that it has, and it was certainly justified for me to be angry. We can find easy justification for our upset. We give it all kinds of labels. We dress it up, make it sound nice, like social justice. Something to get upset about right there, for sure, because somebody's being treated unfairly. Regardless of the truth that no one is experiencing anything other than what they have created for themselves, had they have made for themselves in an illusory dream. So it makes sense, doesn't it? That I am never upset for the reason that I think I am, because I'm making it up. Any and all things that I get upset about, I am making it up. Out of nothing. Because I'm not joined in the mind with my higher self. I cannot know truth of anything that I see. But when I am joined in mind with my higher self, I can know the truth of everything I see through the eyes, through the vision, through the knowing of my higher self, my true self, the Holy Spirit. Nothing more than my right mind. But the sleeping small self cannot know the life I'm living today, really. Can only make up some images and some stories that seem to be fairly congruent with it until it gets way out of whack and images and experiences and people show up that are ridiculous. And I wake up and go, well, that was ridiculous. That was a crazy dream. That never happened. That would never happen. I can't really walk on water. Or can I? I can't really fly. Or can I? I can't really levitate. Or can I? What can you do in a dream? Anything you can imagine. So what are you imagining in your dream? Are you imagining that there's something that's worthy of upset? Are you imagining that there's something worthy of taking advantage of other people for? Are you imagining that there's something that justifies anger or withholding of love or compassion or empathy or understanding or your presence or your attention, your full appreciation? Or can we join? Can we just become present and join with this inner voice of wisdom? And yes, we know it now. We know it's with us. We know it's always with us. We're never alone. And request and dialogue and begin to take advantage of the perfect knowing of our higher self, of the bigger part of what we are, of who and what we are. Our right mind. We'll continue over the next 9 days to go back through all of these lessons. And you no doubt would notice today that, yes, he's adding a little bit different flavor to these first 5 lessons as we went back through them today. Nothing I see means anything. I've given what I see all the meaning it has for me. I do not understand anything I see. These thoughts do not mean anything. I am never upset for the reason I think. He's given all of these a little bit of new wisdom and a little bit of a new taste because we've already grown, because we've already gone through 50 lessons and we're already starting to shift our consciousness. We're already beginning to release potentially some of the commitments that we've made to error. And maybe we're beginning to let go and accept that maybe of our own selves, we know nothing. Thank you for joining me today. I love you. God bless you for being here. God bless you for being on this journey, because you are joined with all of the sonship. All of the children of God are with you. And as you let go of false ideas, your consciousness and the vibration of your consciousness and the love you hold will be shared with all of the sonship and affects everyone indeed. We'll be back tomorrow. I love you. Stay the course. And I'll see you then. God bless.
Forgive us our illusions, Father, and help us to accept our true relationship with you, in which there are no illusions and where none can ever enter. Our holiness is yours. What can there be in us that needs forgiveness when yours is perfect? The sleep of forgetfulness is only the unwillingness to remember your forgiveness and your love. Let us not wander to temptation, for the temptation of the Son of God is not your will. And let us receive only what you have given, and accept but this into the minds which you created and which you love. Amen.
I send my love over the mountains. I send